What happens when three young philosophers walk into a Parisian bar and order apricot cocktails? In 1932, that seemingly mundane moment sparked a philosophical revolution. Raymond Aron, fresh from Berlin, excitedly described phenomenology to Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir. If you are a phenomenologist, you can talk about this cocktail and make philosophy out of it. Sartre reportedly turned pale with excitement. Within weeks, he'd devoured Edmund Husserl's work and arranged his own trip to Berlin. This conversation birthed existentialism, a philosophy rejecting abstract theories for lived experience, one that would dominate intellectual life for decades and fundamentally reshape how we understand freedom, authenticity, and what it means to be human. By the late 1940s, existentialism had become a cultural phenomenon. Sartre's 1945 lecture drew such crowds that women fainted in the heat. The Catholic Church banned his works, while Marxists attacked his emphasis on individual freedom. Yet condemnation only enhanced existentialism's appeal among the young, who adopted black turtlenecks and gathered in left bank cafes, treating philosophy not as academic exercise, but as a way of life. Three 19th-century thinkers planted existentialism's seeds by rebelling against the era's mechanistic worldview. Søren Kierkegaard, born in Copenhagen in 1813 with a twisted spine, took solitary people baths, philosophical walks through city streets. He challenged Descartes' "I think, therefore I am," insisting existence precedes any statements about it. Constant choosing brings the dizziness of freedom, answered through a leap of faith. He identified three stages: aesthetic, pleasure-seeking; ethical, duty-bound; and religious, embracing the absurd through faith. Friedrich Nietzsche declared, "God is dead," and demanded we affirm every moment through eternal recurrence. Imagine living your exact life repeatedly forever. Could you embrace it? His Übermensch represented not superhuman power, but self-overcoming and creating new values. Edmund Husserl provided the methodological breakthrough with phenomenology's command to return to the things themselves. Strip away assumptions to focus on phenomena as they appear. Consider your morning coffee, not its chemistry, but the immediate experience, aroma, warmth, bitter taste. This bracketing out of speculation liberated serious discussion of direct experience, providing existentialists their analytical toolkit. Martin Heidegger transformed phenomenology into something profound and troubling. Known as the Little Magician from Messkirk, he wore black forest dress while teaching at Freiburg, cultivating a rustic mystique. Students described his lectures as breathtaking swirls of questions, culminating in deep, dark clouds of sentences from which lightning flashed. His 1927 masterpiece, Being in Time, distinguished between beings, particular entities, and being itself, the fundamental mystery of existence. Heidegger approached human existence, Dasein, or their being, through everyday life rather than abstract contemplation. We're typically absorbed in purposeful activities, hammering nails rather than contemplating hammers, revealing our fundamental mode of care. Yet he identified das Man, the they, an impersonal force that robs us of authentic thinking. We say, they say, and follow along, surrendering individual judgment. Authentic living requires hearing the voice of conscience and taking responsibility for genuine decisions. The tragedy? Despite advocating resistance to conformity, Heidegger embraced Nazism. In 1933, he became Freiburg's rector, joined the Nazi Party, and delivered pro-Nazi speeches. His Black Notebooks, published in 2014, confirmed his anti-Semitic views. The philosopher who warned against Das Man succumbed to history's darkest collective delusion. While Heidegger retreated to his Black Forest hut, Sartre and Beauvoir developed existentialism as engaged philosophy. Sartre's novel Nausea features Anton Roquentin staring at a chestnut tree's boiled leather surface, overwhelmed by its sheer being, its inexplicable, pointless existence. Only jazz provides relief, creating necessity where each note purposefully follows another. Sartre's being and nothingness divided existence into two realms, the pour soi, for itself, human consciousness defined by freedom, and the en soi, in itself, everything else that simply exists. Consciousness has no substance, it's merely intentional reaching toward things. His reversal of Descartes, I am nothing, therefore I am free. This radical freedom produces anxiety because we're nothing beyond what we decide to be. To avoid this, we engage in bad faith, pretending we're not free through alarm clocks, social roles, or blaming external factors. Excuses like, I'm just not a morning person, deny that you could choose differently. Beauvoir applied existentialism to women's experiences in the second sex. Her famous assertion, one is not born, but rather becomes a woman, introduced her analysis of how girls learn constrained ways of being in the world. Women become other rather than transcendent subjects, constantly seeing themselves through the male gaze. Maurice Merleau-Ponty's The Phenomenology of Perception established that all experience flows through our sensitive, moving bodies. Even abstract thought relies on physical metaphors. We grasp concepts, wrestle with ideas, hold beliefs. We rarely experience raw sensations. Phenomena arrive already interpreted. Seeing a chair, we immediately perceive chair, complete with function and context. His exploration of proprioception, our innate sense of body position, revealed profound insights. Unlike external objects requiring active location, our body is immediately present. I might have to hunt for my knitting needles, but I don't hunt for my hands. This awareness extends to familiar tools. A skilled driver feels their car's dimensions as naturally as their limbs. For Merleau-Ponty, consciousness could never be Sartre's pure nothingness. He offered a striking metaphor. Consciousness is like a fold in the world's fabric, a crumpled hollow maintaining its form before being smoothed away. Later, he developed the chiasm concept, consciousness as intricate intertwining with the world. Like crossed hands grasping each other, we see because we can be seen. Touching something, it touches us back. The existentialists' philosophies were forged during World War II and Nazi occupation. When Germany invaded France in May 1940, Sartre was captured while Beauvoir remained in occupied Paris. These experiences profoundly shaped their thinking about freedom, responsibility, and engagement. Paris under occupation maintained uncanny normalcy, except for Germans everywhere. Beauvoir resumed writing in cafes despite Nazi officers at nearby tables, making compromises to survive, signing documents stating she wasn't Jewish, finding black market food, salvaging spoiled meat. The collaborationist government's moralistic propaganda reminded her of bourgeois hypocrisy from childhood, now backed by violence. Imprisoned at Stalag 12D, Sartre immersed himself in Heidegger's Being and Time, philosophy born from Germany's 1918 humiliation, perfectly suited to France's 1940 defeat. He developed notes for being and nothingness, then escaped using his eye condition as pretext, securing a medical pass and walking out. Returning to Paris, Sartre formed the resistance group Socialisme et Liberté, primarily writing manifestos. After liberation, existentialism exploded into public consciousness. The Cold War soon created painful divisions. Camus opposed political violence, famously saying about Algerian rebels, "My mother might be on one of those tramways. If that is justice, then I prefer my mother." Sartre viewed this as evasive. Their rupture came in 1951 after Camus published The Rebel. Sartre wrote a blistering attack, declaring their friendship over.
Existentialists have vanished, yet their ideas permeate modern culture. Anxiety, bad faith, authenticity, freedom's paradoxes shape our discourse. Freedom remains our era's great puzzle. We can't agree on what it means or how much we'll surrender for convenience. Science increasingly suggests we're not truly free agents, but collections of irrational responses veiled by conscious control's illusion. Heidegger's 1953 lecture, The Question Concerning Technology, argued technology reveals something fundamental about existence. Contemporary Heideggerians analyze the internet as revealing technology's essence. Infinite connectivity promises availability while removing privacy and depth, turning everything, including ourselves, into resources for an impersonal they. The imponderable bloom of life, E.M. Forster's phrase, lies at the heart of human mystery. This bloom is what existentialists studied, experiences quality as we live it, not as explained away by frameworks. The existentialists offer no simple solutions. They were flawed individuals, shaped by their dark, morally compromised century. Yet this is why they demand rereading. They remind us of both human limitations and possibilities. In our world of screens and algorithms, where they tell us what to think through feeds and targeted content, the existentialist call to authentic choice rings urgent. Your freedom isn't comfortable. It's terrifying, exhilarating, and inescapable.